we'll just go without it. Those of you that were here this morning will recall that we talked about faith and about the fact that we walk by faith as opposed to knowledge. We talked about how knowledge, if you're speaking in a formal sense, is really firsthand understanding of something by your own personal experience. And we don't have an understanding of Jesus and what he did and his teachings on the basis of personal experience. We weren't there 2,000 years ago. We didn't see Jesus do these miracles. We didn't hear what he had to say. But we rather walk by faith. But as we talked about this morning, that does not mean that we just engage in wishful thinking. That we're just gullible people and we want this to be true and we want Jesus to be the Son of God. And so we believe that just because. No, we talked this morning about how our faith and real faith is always based upon evidence. And the faith that the Bible is talking about is a faith that comes from the evidence of testimony of those who were witnesses, who did have firsthand knowledge of the things that they saw Jesus do by miraculous power and firsthand knowledge of what he said and what he taught. So that's what we talked about in this morning's lesson. Now, if we were to just stop there, it might give us the impression that really all you have to do if you want to convert somebody to Jesus Christ is just make sure that they get that information from the witnesses, that they get that testimony. That all you need to do is to make sure that you can get them to read that testimony of the Apostle John, or that testimony that you read in the Gospels of Matthew and Mark. And once they see that testimony, then they'll be convinced and persuaded that Jesus is the Son of God, and they'll be saying, where's the baptistry? I want to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's not quite that easy. When you're talking with somebody who maybe believes in Jesus as the Son of God, and yet they've been brought up with various teachings that maybe are not in accordance with what the witnesses have recorded Jesus having taught, you might think, well, all you got to do is just open up the Bible to where that person can read it. And maybe that person has just never read these passages. And so you can show them that baptism is necessary to be saved and that Jesus taught that by just showing them those passages, and that's all there is to it. But it's not that simple. Because even though we are rational beings, we as creatures of God, we have a mental capacity, we're able to evaluate evidence, we're able to evaluate testimony and weigh all of that. Even though we have the capacity to do all of that, there's something else about us as human beings. Something else that's just part of us. Sometimes it's referred to as our mind. Sometimes it's referred to as our psyche. Sometimes people refer to it as, well, it's the spirit within an individual. And all those are appropriate terms. The Bible, maybe more often than any other, likes to use the term the heart of an individual. We have something in us as human beings that you can refer to as our heart. And each and every human being has a heart that is in control of how we evaluate and treat testimony, how we treat evidence. It's all dependent upon a person's heart. In fact, that's the reason why a lot of people do not even or won't even allow themselves to even look at the evidence for Jesus being the Son of God. Because in their heart, they've predetermined they don't want to be a follower of Jesus. They don't want to follow those teachings and be one of those disciples. That's not the kind of lifestyle that they want. And so some people won't even consider the evidence whatsoever, even from the outset. And that's their heart. And our heart has the capacity to decide what kind of evidence we're even going to evaluate and how much weight we're going to give to it. That's the reason why sometimes there are people who will conclude various things about Jesus or even about other things in ordinary life that they've really predetermined because of their own bias and their own prejudice. There's a movie I just recently have seen that maybe some of you have seen. I believe I got the title right. It was called The Conspiracy. It's a movie based upon Marie Surratt, who was hanged as one of the Lincoln assassination plot people. And apparently, and I've read about this before, apparently she was unjustly tried, first of all, and unjustly convicted of that crime. No real evidence that she was a party to all of that. In fact, another individual, Dr. Mudd, from the name is Mudd, or person's name is Mudd fame. Again, a person who apparently had nothing to do with any of the conspiracy to assassinate President Lincoln, and yet the people involved in the trial were so intent upon seeing to it that these people were executed for this crime that the evidence really didn't matter, and any breaches in legal precedent didn't matter, and fairness and equity didn't matter. They predetermined what the verdict was going to be, at least in those two cases. And maybe even as you and I think about court cases that we have known in our experience, we may suspect that there are occasions where maybe a jury had predetermined whether or not they thought this individual was guilty or not guilty, and in their heart they were not willing to consider the evidence in a fair and unbiased way. Our heart has that capacity. That's the way we are as human beings. Jeremiah said this in Jeremiah 17 and verse 9. He said, "The heart is more deceitful than all else and is desperately sick. Who can understand it? I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give each man according to his way." You see, if you want to talk about human beings and really understand us, you have to recognize that there is a part of us, our heart, that is in complete control of everything, and it's completely adept at self-deception. In fact, that's one of the amazing things about it, is that in our hearts, we can rationalize away the evidence so that what we want to accept as the truth, that's what we do accept as the truth, and yet we convince ourselves that we're not being biased at all, that we're not being prejudiced at all. We convince ourselves we're just looking at the evidence honestly and objectively. And yet, so often what we're really doing is just deceiving ourselves. Are you aware of the fact that even today, in the 21st century, there's a flat earth society? You aware of that? It's a group of people who believe that we do not live upon a spherical planet, and we're not orbiting the sun, and that we're not part of this Milky Way galaxy that is in orbit and going around the universe. No, there are people who believe that the Earth is flat and that there's sort of a dome over us, but that the earth is flat and it's just this land area surrounded by the oceans, and there's this dome that covers us, and that's where the stars are and everything. But they have that view of the cosmos. It's the Flat Earth Society. And the reason why they believe that is because they think that that is the scientific picture that the Bible is trying to give of the cosmos. The Bible uses descriptions sometimes like that, but not because it's trying to give some scientific description of the cosmos. But the flat earthers absolutely have convinced themselves, despite all the evidence to the contrary, that we just live upon a flat world. And that's an example of the kind of capacity that we as human beings have. That's the way our heart can function. Matthew 13, Jesus quoted from Isaiah chapter 6, and he said this, "In the case of the Jews of his day, the prophecy of Isaiah is being fulfilled. For the heart of this people has become dull. With their ears they scarcely hear, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise they would see with their eyes, hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and return to me." As human beings, we have an amazing capacity to predetermine what our view of reality is and look at whatever so-called evidence is there to support our predetermined view, and then convince ourselves that we're just being objective and we're being honest with the evidence. Let me read you a couple of quotations here from people who deny the Holocaust. Are you aware of the Holocaust, kids? Have you studied about that in school? Have you seen the photographs of the gas chambers and the emaciated bodies and the hundreds and hundreds of corpses? Have you seen that? You need to be aware of that. 1991, in Guardian Weekly, Palestinian newspaper, Robert Farrison said this, "The alleged Hitlerian gas chambers and the alleged genocide of the Jews from one and the same historical lie, which permitted a gigantic financial swindle whose chief beneficiaries have been the State of Israel and international Zionism, and whose main victims have been the German people and the Palestinian people as a whole." Can you believe there are people that deny the Holocaust? That really deny that there was an active plot to eradicate, to exterminate the Jewish people, and that 6 million Jews were murdered? There are people who deny that, despite the abundant evidence. Mark Weber said this in his statement in 1989, "Don't for a minute think that indoctrinating wide-eyed school children with the lies and slanders against Germans and the other people isn't a primary purpose of the Holocaust mongers. The Holocaust is a religion. Its underpinnings in the realm of historical fact are non-existent. No Hitler order, no plan, no budget, no gas chambers, no autopsies of gas victims, no bones, no ashes, no skulls, no nothing. All a lie. It's all a swindle. All a hoax." There are people who in their heart have become so hardened about these things, they've convinced themselves that their view of reality is reality, and that's the facts, and everybody else is deceived and they're not. This is our capacity as human beings. This is part of us. We're not, even though we like to think of ourselves, just rational, unprejudiced people. Far from it. In our hearts, we can change the evidence. We can engage in revisionist history. We can create our own reality and convince ourselves that we're not being self-deceived at all. People need to understand then how this all relates to the Bible and the evidence for Jesus. You might ask the question, well, how much evidence is really there that God provides for us concerning Jesus? As I've said this morning to you, I think the stronger the evidence, the stronger our faith. And that's the reason why in a lot of the lessons and classes that I try to give, I try to emphasize the evidence. That's been something that, for me personally, has been faith building. And I hope that it's beneficial to all of y'all to look at those kinds of things that are an evidentiary support for the truth about Jesus and his historicity and his miracles and all those things that support his claim to be the Son of God. How much evidence is there? How strong is the evidence? You know, no matter what you're talking about, if the evidence is insufficient. Even honest hearts can't believe it. You ever thought about that? If the evidence for whatever proposition you're talking about is insufficient, then even the honest hearts can't accept it, can't believe it. In fact, sometimes that happens maybe with a court trial where maybe here's a person who really is guilty of the alleged crime, and yet the jury, in trying to be very honest with all this, they have to conclude the prosecution just didn't give us enough evidence to compel us to say, yes, this is something that we can accept beyond a reasonable doubt that this person is guilty of that. And so sometimes even honest people don't conclude the truth because of insufficient evidence. But you know, the other side of the coin is also true. If you've got a case where the evidence for some proposition is tremendously overwhelming, just so overwhelming in its evidence, even dishonest hearts can't help but accept it. There can come a time where even that person with a prejudiced heart, a dishonest heart, who doesn't want to accept the conclusion, if the evidence is so overwhelming, sometimes that person can't deny it, can't find some way even in his heart to rationalize around it. How much evidence does God give? How much evidence does God give for Jesus? I think the Bible answers that question for us. I think the Bible's answer to that question is that God gives us sufficient evidence to persuade any honest-hearted person. Any person with an honest heart who is willing to look at evidence honestly, willing to look at the testimony of the alleged witnesses honestly. There is sufficient evidence there for that person to say, yes, absolutely, I'm convinced Jesus is the Son of God. But I think the Bible is emphasizing God has purposely made it such that there's not so much overwhelming evidence that even the dishonest person won't have any other kind of alternative or any other kind of explanation that he could come up with to try to rationalize it away. Let me read a passage of Scripture for you. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 10 and following, here's what the Apostle Paul says as he's talking about that one who would be in league with Satan and deceive people. And he says this, that he would come with all the deception of wickedness for those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth so as to be saved. For this reason, God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they will believe what is false, in order that they all may be judged who did not believe the truth but took pleasure in wickedness. What that passage says to me is that our God is absolutely providing us with a sufficient amount of evidence for us as honest people to accept that Jesus is the Son of God and that here's His teaching and that's what we need to be following. But He's also allowing there to be error out there. There are deluding influences out there. There are deluding alternative possibilities. That, yeah, people with dishonest hearts who really don't want to accept the truth, as he says in that passage, don't have a love for the truth, they can grab on to something else, an alternative way of viewing things. They can therefore recreate things according to their own reality and according to their wishes and determine that there's no grounds for them to accept Jesus or no grounds for them to accept what the Bible has to say about Jesus. And therefore, I can live in this way and I can be guilt-free. I don't have to worry about it. I'm making a rational, unprejudiced decision. And yet, they really are just engaging in self-delusion. And their heart has become that hardened kind of deceitful heart. And they don't realize it. And that's what Paul says in that passage. God allows that kind of deluding influence to be there. But it's only going to delude those people who just don't have a love for the truth and take pleasure in those things which are contrary to God's will. Take pleasure in wickedness. They want to do it their way, and God has so designed it. If you want to just do it your way and not worry about doing it God's way, you'll be able to come up with some way to rationalize that and convince yourself that you're being an honest person and that you don't have to worry about facing God on Judgment Day. That's the way this whole thing works. And so we've been talking today about the idea of faith. And no, we don't have firsthand knowledge, but neither is it wishful thinking. It's a faith based upon evidence. And Jesus says, based on the evidence that is provided, this testimony of eyewitnesses who saw his miracles, Jesus is saying, like he said to the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4, believe me. Believe me. Follow me. Accept my teaching. I'm doing all of this and saying all this for your benefit. Jesus says, believe me. And there's reason to believe in it. The evidence is sufficient if you're an honest person. And of course, that person who doesn't have an honest heart, he can say, well, yeah, that all that business you're saying, you're admitting the evidence isn't just so overwhelming. That may just be some way that you're trying to give to then make people feel guilty if they don't accept this teaching of Jesus. And yeah, that's one of those little alternative views you can come up with. But that's why you've got to examine your own heart. And you've got to look deep inside yourself at this part of you that controls everything and how you treat testimony and how you treat evidence. And you've got to decide for yourself, are you really being honest with it? Are you really being objective with it? And if you're not accepting Jesus, if you're not accepting what the Bible says about what Jesus taught, if you're refusing to accept that, whatever reason you come up with as to why you're not accepting it, is it possible you're deceiving yourself? Is it possible your heart is becoming like Jesus talked about, that heart that becomes dull and insensitive and hardened, and you have eyes but you don't see, and you have ears but you don't hear? Is it possible that that's going on in your case? That's what we've all got to decide, each and every one of us, about ourselves. And so if there's someone here tonight who's looked into your heart and looked at the testimony and the evidence about Jesus, and you believe him, and you want to serve him, if you need to be baptized into Jesus tonight, why not do it? Don't allow your heart to become insensitive and hardened and try to rationalize away, oh, I don't need to be baptized. I don't need to do that now. I'll do it later. I'll put it off. You know, all those things are just all part of that self-deception mechanism of our heart. If you're ready and willing, with an honest heart to serve Jesus, we sure would love to help you tonight obey him in baptism. Or whatever be your need. Won't you come together? We stand and sing this song of encouragement.